Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, January 12th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin the second hour by reading the list of the names in the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Robert Henry Andreg, Maxine Bertich, Robert Eno Buck, Charon Couch, Bernadine Evans, Tanya Mills Garfinkel, Deborah Ann Hammond, Jack E. Hayes, Bill Hickman Sr., Robert Hugh Hodges, Virginia Marie Jolivet, known as Ginny, F. Richard Camps, Lorraine Lee, known as Lori, Carolyn Joanne Lostraco, Ramon C. Martinez, Virginia Erlene Mayberry, Colleen McCarthy, Joan Parkinson, Brooks Pugh, Helen Rodriguez, Verla Castleman Shaw, Lillian Loreen Shipley, Adolph B. Trujillo, Nancy Ann Tyson Tedgy, Earl Raymond Weinhold, Ronald Dexter Yates, known as Ron. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. And now we will turn to the economy section of the paper. It looks like there's just one article in this section. It's fairly big. It's like four columns wide. It's entitled, "These Apps Will Help You Reach 2025 Goals." It was written by Jennifer Jolly as a special for the USA Today. So, what's it going to be this year? Are you vowing to work less and exercise more? Or to prioritize your overall health and relationships with your family? Or maybe you resolve to stop making New Year's resolutions? Most of them fail miserably, after all. As soon as the champagne bubbles settled in the wee hours of January 1st, the reality sinks in. In 2025, and we need to be just as productive, organized, and centered as ever. But do we really expect this year, and more importantly, this year's resolutions, to be any different from the years past? Well, whether you promise to meditate more, or streamline your work days, or find a creative outlet to let your brain soar, these apps can help you make 2025 the year that you achieve your dreams. Zen and the Art of a Balanced Life. It's always a good idea to head into the new year with a collective exhale. I use the Headspace app for my must-have meditation sessions, and it's perfect for those moments when life feels like a blender going full tilt without a lid. It's not just cross-legged, style meditations either. Headspace now has active meditations for mindful movement and podcasts, too. My favorites are the meditations tailored to anxiety and self-esteem, which are serious lifesavers during my most hectic weeks. You get 2 weeks of Headspace for free, and the annual subscription is $70 for an entire year. Now, sweating is a boon for stress relief as well. That glowing feeling you get after a nice workout session is hard to beat. But I don't always have an hour to jog through the hills. In fact, when I'm traveling, there are rarely any hills at all. So Fit On is my go-to when I need an exercise routine that fits my life, because I can grab anything from a quick 10-minute ab crusher to a relaxing yoga session that I can do in my hotel room. Now, you can try the app for free, but if you want to level up with meal plans and bonus features, the pro version is reasonable at $40 a year. Now, it's probably apparent by now I don't have a ton of extra time on my hands. But I make it work with Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist. It's an app that digests nonfiction books and serves you a 15-minute summary. Think of it like Cliff Notes, but for adulthood. I fold laundry and get productivity hacks and leadership tips from the top thinkers of our day. It works for me. Another app that works to read books is Libby. If you have a library card, you can check out audiobooks and ebooks for free all year. I'm listening to a great one right now entitled You Dreamed of Empires by Alvaro Enrique. I highly recommend it. And doing it via Libby, it saves a ton of money versus buying each title from the Apple bookstore at $5 to $10 plus a pop. Did I mention that Libby is 100% free? Financial savvy made simple. Speaking of spending too much money, January might be a time for resolutions, but saving money is a year-long affair. Rocket Money. Now, you might have known them as Truebill, but Rocket Money saves me cold, hard cash every single month. You link it with your accounts, and it sniffs out the recurring payments you might not even know that you are making. Is there a streaming service that you thought you canceled last year? Well, a free trial that may be converted into an actual bill without you knowing? Rocket Money finds where you have been flushing money down the drain and plugs those leaks. It's free to try, but with the premium features, they range anywhere from $6 to $12 a month. But it does pay for itself in no time. And with the cash you save, put some of it to work for you. Even investing newbies often find the Stash app, S-T-A-S-H, Stash app, easy to use. It's a simple, accessible doorway to diversified investing. And you can start with as little as $5. The app has user-friendly educational tools and guides that turn investing confusion into empowerment. And when life gets to be just a little too much, Todoist can be your North Star. T-O-D-O-I-S-T, Todoist. I use it because I can finally see all of my calendars in one place, and it tracks my reminders and my tasks from various apps. My brain just works better if I can see everything at a glance, and Todoist is that place. There's a totally free beginner plan, but the paid pro plan is $5 a month or $48 a year. Connecting and creating. Nobody said adulting can't be fun, right? Whenever I have a few minutes standing around an airport lounge or waiting for a meeting to start, I tap my worries away with happy color. It may sound childish, but coloring is a universal pastime, and these color-by-number adult coloring book pages deliver the goods. With thousands of soothing designs, it keeps me from doom-scrolling, and that's priceless. And it's free, with a paid option to remove the ads. Speaking of childish fun, coloring is one thing, but sometimes parents have to set screen time rules and stick by them. Aura, the Aura app, A-U-R-A, is super simple to set up and use, and it lets you pause internet access, monitor content, block sites, and basically act as a guardian angel for your kids' gadgets. It even works with the apps that kids are addicted to right now, like TikTok and Roblox. It's like digital training wheels, and it's free to try, with a paid subscription priced at around $10 a month or $120 a year. And that was Jennifer Jolly's article, These Apps Will Help You Reach 2025 Goals. We're coming up on 10 minutes past the hour. It's time to move on over to the sports section. Well, the cover story from the sports section is entitled Chiefs Mahomes Have Big Shot at Three-Peat. This was written by Bob McManaman. He's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. Here's what he wrote. There have been some impressive NFL super teams during the Super Bowl era, but in 58 years, we have never witnessed a three-peat champion. Eight franchises have won back-to-back titles, but never a third straight, and the reasons varied for each of them in the following season. There were the abrupt coaching changes, the 1968 Green Bay Packers and the 1994 Dallas Cowboys, the crazy late-game heroics by the opponent, the 1974 Miami Dolphins, the switches with the starting quarterback, like the Denver Broncos did in 1999, the untimely injuries at the key positions, like the 1976 Pittsburgh Steelers and the 1990 San Francisco 49ers, and when you lose the turnover battle, like the 2005 New England Patriots, and then there's simply depreciation of their star power, like the 1980 Steelers. But as the wild card playoff round opened this weekend, the Kansas City Chiefs became the ninth team in position to become the first. Upon winning their ninth consecutive AFC West title and earning a bye into the divisional round, where they will meet the lowest-seeded wildcard team remaining next weekend, the Chiefs have a chance to reach the Super Bowl for the fifth time in 6 years. They are a veritable dynasty, having won it three times during that stretch. But can they capture it a fourth time to become the league's only three-peat champ? Longtime super agent Lee Steinberg, who in 2020 negotiated a 10-year, $450 million contract extension for the Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, which is the most lucrative deal in the history of North American sports, well, he said, they have to be the favorite until someone knocks them off. Then he went on and said, look at their record, 15-2. And that's in a season where people have been critical about how they have been playing, which is crazy. Well, that's mostly because the 10 of the Chiefs' wins were decided by just one score. Hogwash, Steinberg says, noting the 1972 undefeated Miami Dolphins won, quote, some ugly games, unquote, during their 14-0 season. Well, at least three of them. Other than a few games, that team was simply dominant. Steinberg said, quote, every game is not going to be pristine ball, but you have to favor the Chiefs. Obviously, the Buffalo Bills are playing at a very high level now. Baltimore is always going to be a contender. These are franchises that have good ownership and are well run. But the question is, who gets hot now? Doesn't matter how you played in September. On the other side of it, you have the Detroit Lions, who are probably the overwhelming favorite as the number one seed from the NFC. But there are multiple teams who can win this thing. It's the oldest cliche in the world. It's any given Sunday. To me, well, it's a four-team race. I won't be surprised if the Chiefs are playing in Super Bowl 59 on February 9th in New Orleans. But I also believe someone could knock them off before they get there, especially like that team of the likable number two-seeded Bills. They host the Broncos in the AFC Wild game on Sunday. The surging Lions seem destined to become NFC champions. They're playing with confidence and swag, and Coach Dan Campbell has his team wired to make it happen. But don't discount a team from the rest of the NFC field getting in the way. Specifically, those second-seeded Eagles, who will host the Packers on Sunday. Well, that was the Chiefs. Mahomes have big shot at three-peat. And from inside the sports section, we have a little basketball news written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic. Suns to face NBA best Cavaliers on MLK Day during five-game trip. The Phoenix Suns end a three-game homestand Sunday against the Charlotte Hornets, who handed them their worst loss of the season last week, 115-104 at the Spectrum Center. The Hornets had just 7 wins going into the game. The Suns then begin a 5-game road trip on Tuesday at Atlanta as they play every other day during the trip. Phoenix defeated the Hawks last Thursday at home. So here's a breakdown of Phoenix's 5-game road trip that includes a matchup against the Cleveland Cavaliers on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which the Cavs have the NBA's best record. Tuesday will be at Atlanta Hawks. In their last meeting, the Suns won 123-115 on January 9th in Phoenix, as they had 4 players score at least 20 points, with Bradley Beal scoring a game-high 25 points. Then Thursday, it will be at the Washington Wizards. Now, in their last meeting, the Suns won 140-112, and that was back on February 4th of 24. That was in Washington, D.C., and that's when Beal scored 43 points in a return game against his former team. Then, on Saturday, they'll be at the Detroit Pistons. Their last meeting, well, that was when the Suns lost 133-125. That was back on December 21st. In Phoenix, as Kevin Durant scored 43 points in that loss, Phoenix committed 19 turnovers that led to 34 Detroit points. Then, on MLK Day, on January 20th, they'll be at the Cleveland Cavaliers. In their last meeting, the Suns won 122-101. That was last April 3rd in Phoenix. That's when Devin Booker posted 40 points and 8 assists. On January 26th, they'll be at the Brooklyn Nets. Now, their last meeting, the Suns lost that game, 127-117, and that was back in November in Phoenix, and that's when Booker scored 31 points, and the Nets forward, Cam Johnson, scored 11 points against his former team. So far, the Suns are 6-11 on the road this season. Last season, they finished 24-17 in the away games under Frank Vogel, but he was fired after one season, and he was replaced by coach Mike Budenholzer. And that's Suns to face NBA best Cavaliers on MLK Day during 5-game trip. Our next article, it's a little tennis. Ooh, Sinner under a cloud for Aussie Open run from Melbourne, Australia. Defending champion Jannik Sinner, that's S-I-N-N-E-R, should be riding the crest of a wave as he prepares for the Australian Open as the dominant force in men's tennis. But instead, he returns to the scene of his maiden Grand Slam title under a cloud. On the court, the 23-year-old Italian has opened a gap to his rivals, ending last year as the clear world number one after a remarkable season in which he won 8 titles and lost only 6 of the 79 matches that he contested. He crowned 2024 with the ATP Finals title and also led Italy to the successive Davis Cup crown. But Sinner gives the impression of a player with all the answers against whoever he comes up against. But the off-court questions he is likely to face about the doping case that surfaced in August, might be harder to shrug off. Now, he was cleared of any wrongdoing after failing 2 drug tests in March. An independent tribunal convened by the International Tennis Integrity Agency accepting that the anabolic agent Clostebol, C-L-O-S-T-E-B-O-L, had inadvertently entered his system from a member of his support team through massages. Sinner, who has always maintained his innocence, was docked the 400 ranking points and prize money that he earned for reaching the semifinals at Indian Wells, where the tests were carried out. But he escaped a ban, raising eyebrows among some in the tennis community who cried, "Double standards." The World Anti-Doping Agency has since launched an appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport over the judgment. And while Sinner focuses on trying to defend his title, he will do so knowing that his fate is yet to be decided, and a damaging ban does remain a possibility. Australian player Nick Kyrgios, K-Y-R-G-I-O-S, never one to sit on the fence, says the Sinner scenario, together with a similar situation involving Poland's Iga Swiatek, has been a, quote, horrific, unquote, look for the integrity of the sport. Sinner will attempt to continue to let his racket do the talking, but the world's glare on the year's first Grand Slam, well, the saga is unlikely to fade into the background. The two-time Grand Slam champion spent Christmas in the snow in northern Italy, conceding it was a tough time after the death of his aunt at the end of last year. He has quickly warmed to the task of defending his Australian Open title since landing in Melbourne, though, looking sharp in an exhibition match win over Australian Alexei Popyrin on Rod Laver Arena on Thursday. He said after that win, quote, "Coming back here as the reigning champion feels good. It's a different sensation, but I'm genuinely looking forward to it. Let's see how I can perform. In my mind, I know how much work we have put in, which hopefully will give me confidence, and we will see how it goes," unquote. Sinner displayed commendable resilience to put aside his off-court distractions to win the U.S. Open last year and end the season in a rich vein of form, but he will need the same laser-like focus if he is to see off the many challenges that he will face in Melbourne. And that's the article, Sinner Under a Cloud for Aussie Open Run. And now for a little golf news. This article is entitled Fishburn, McCarthy on Top at the Midway Point. This was written from the Field Level Media. Patrick Fishburn and Denny McCarthy, two 30-something players, each seeking their first PGA Tour win, share the lead at the midpoint of the Sony Open in Hawaii. Fishburn produced a second consecutive 5-under 65 at the Wailea Country Club on Friday. McCarthy carded a 66, and he is also at 10-under 130 for the tournament. Eric Cole, who was 3rd-under in the second round, Paul Peterson, who was 3rd-under in and Japan's Kensei Hirata, who are 7-under, are tied for third place at 9-under. Lee Hodges, Alex Smalley, Zach Johnson, J.J. Spahn, and Austria's Sepp Straka share 6th place at 8-under. Fishburn started his bogey-free round with a hot streak on the back nine, as he recorded 3 consecutive birdies from number 12, number 13, and number 14. After the turn, he added birdies at number 5 and number 9. The 32-year-old Utah native said the key to his strong 2 rounds was, quote, "probably just keeping the ball in the fairway. I've hit a lot of fairways and feel really comfortable with the putter. First round I made a few long ones. Today felt like everything was kind of going where I wanted it to on the greens. Just a matter of judging the wind and the break. Feel like I'm rolling the ball really well. So excited for the next 2 days," unquote. Fishburn is competing in his 28th career PGA Tour event, and he has never finished higher than 3rd place. He said of his strategy for the weekend, quote, "just to continue what I've been doing, just kind of take what the course gives me and be aggressive when I can, but try to continue to have good course management and hopefully roll a few in," unquote. Now, McCarthy, a 31-year-old Maryland native, is in his 191st start on the tour. He has registered 2 runner-up results back at the 2023 Memorial and the 2024 Valero Texas Open. On Friday, he started birdie, bogey, bogey, and then he was bogey-free the rest of the way and added 5 more birdies. McCarthy said, "I played really well. I played better than yesterday, I think, tee to green. Hit way more fairways today. I missed a lot of short putts, but I guess I made up for it. Maybe a couple longer bonus putts." And Japan's Hideki Matsuyama, coming off a record-breaking victory at the Century last week in Kapalua, Hawaii, he's tied for 42nd place at 4-under after a 1-under 69 on Friday. Now, Matsuyama captured the Sony Open Championship 3 years ago. And that was the article, Fishburne McCarthy on top at the midway point. Well, let's take one last look at football. We started this section by talking about the Chiefs. But this article, written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic, is entitled, Contenders Aim to Topple Kansas City Juggernaut. This year's NFL playoffs offer a unique construct. On one hand, there are the behemoth Kansas City Chiefs. They have won consecutive Super Bowls and are going for a third, which would make them the first team ever to win 3 in a row. Only 3 teams have ever reached 3 straight: 1970s Dolphins, the 1990s Bills, and the 2010 Patriots. But the Chiefs, of course, are led by the game's best player, Patrick Mahomes. They went 15-2, tied for the best record. They have a bye in the AFC and formidable home field advantage at Arrowhead Stadium. And yet, they are not actually the betting favorites to win the Super Bowl. And that's because, for all of their wins and achievements, they rank just 11th in point differential. By defense-adjusted value over average, a catch-all metric that has gained popularity in recent years, they rank 8th. Those numbers are closer to the Broncos and the Commanders than to the Lions and the Bills. So, who are the real contenders in each conference? Well, in the NFC, the contenders are the Detroit Lions and the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, the Lions have comfortably been the best team in football all season. They fell just short of reaching the Super Bowl last winter in a heart-wrenching defeat to the 49ers, but they have spent the past 4 months using that as fuel. Their 2 losses came by a combined 10 points. More often than not, they obliterated their opponents, scoring 39 more points than any other team in the NFL. Now, their defense has been besieged by injuries, including the edge rusher Aiden Hutchinson, who was on track to be the defensive player of the year. But defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn has been able to piece together a top 10 unit. The Eagles, though, they post a formidable challenge in the NFC. They have the conference's best defense and a top 5 offensive line. And that's before you get to the running back, Saquon Barkley, who became the 9th player in NFL history to rush for 2,000 yards in a season. And in a bounce-back year from quarterback Jalen Hurts and a pair of star receivers in A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith, it's easy to see why this team finished 14-3. The Lions' advantage lies in a more explosive passing game, but there is a reason that Philadelphia has not lost with a healthy Hurts since September. Now, the top dog horse, well, that would be the Washington Commanders. It's been a long 3 decades in Washington. For 24 years, the organization was left to decay by owner Dan Snyder. Even the scattered playoff appearances rarely bought genuine hope. But things are different now. Josh Harris bought the team in 2023, hired his staff, led by general manager Adam Peters, head coach Dan Quinn, and offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury. On last winter, they drafted Jaden Daniels in April, and the change has been instant. Daniels led Washington to 12 wins, That's the most since the last Super Bowl season in 1991. The Commanders lack the elite-level talent outside of Daniels and star receiver Terry McLaurin, but their offense is genuinely explosive. They rank fifth in points scored. They could pull off an upset or two as the NFC's number six seed. My championship game pick, that would be the Philadelphia Eagles over the Detroit Lions. Now in the AFC, the contenders, well, that's the Kansas City Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills and the Baltimore Ravens. They have three genuine contenders in the AFC. Just ask the betting markets, where Super Bowl odds more than double between the third team in the AFC, Baltimore, and the third team in the NFC, Minnesota. So Kansas City, with the bye and the Super Bowl pedigree, heads the list. But Buffalo and its top-scoring offense might be the most intriguing team in this conference. This is not the gunslinging Josh Allen of years past. He's had his total attempts curtailed from 409 in 2021 all the way down to 307 this year. But in the process, the Bills have learned to protect the ball, morphing into a team with the league's best turnover margin. The defense is only slightly above average, but everything Buffalo has done over the past few years, both with roster construction and schematics, well, it was all aimed at building a team that could win in the playoffs. And then there's Baltimore, which is tied with Buffalo for the NFL's third best scoring margin, despite its relatively pedestrian 12-5 record. The Ravens have a remarkable 7 wins against teams in the playoff field, including that 35-10 win over the Bills back in September. Plus, they might even be better than their scoring margins suggest. They lead the NFL in net yards per pass attempt and in yards per rush attempt. And their defense also holds teams to the league's lowest yards per rush attempt. So who's the top dog horse in the AFC? Well, that would be, the Los Angeles Chargers? It's hard to find a dark horse. The two best teams are led by Jared Goff and Jalen Hurts. They're good quarterbacks, but they're not game-breaking superstars. It's a lot harder for an inferior team to go on the road and beat a team led by Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. But that is the task facing the AFC hopefuls. And if anyone can do it, it might be Jim Harbaugh's Chargers. After finishing his 8-year stint at Michigan with a national title, Harbaugh returned to the NFL and immediately turned this organization around with a 6-win improvement between seasons. Plus, the Chargers have the best scoring defense in the NFL and an elite quarterback of their own, Justin Herbert. A first-round matchup with the beatable Houston Texans should also help. But still, it's kind of hard to envision a deep run. Championship game pick, well, that would be the Buffalo Bills over Kansas City Chiefs. My Super Bowl pick, the Buffalo Bills over Philadelphia Eagles. Oh, my. That was the article, Contenders Aim to Topple Kansas City Juggernaut, written by Theo Mackey for the Arizona Republic. At 34 minutes past the hour, it's time to move on over to the viewpoint section and read some opinions. Our first opinion piece in the editorial section of the paper, or the viewprint section of the paper, was written by Elvia Diaz, who is a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, Don't Be Fooled. Lakin-Riley Act is a blatant power grab. Here's what she wrote. Deporting criminals, including shoplifters, is a no-brainer. But the Lakin-Riley Act isn't that simple. The legislation cruising through Congress does not just expand deportation of nonviolent offenders, but also strips due process and clears the way for states to meddle with immigration enforcement. A lot of attention is on the fact that Democrats, including Arizona U.S. Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, are eagerly backing the bill. Well, why are Democrats turning on migrants now? Because being tough on migrants is suddenly in vogue in Donald Trump's America, regardless of the broader and unintended consequences. Selling the legislation is merely deporting criminals. That's politically convenient. Americans will eat that up in one gulp. After all, who could possibly defend criminals? But don't be fooled by the sound bites. The legislation, which cleared the House with the support of 48 Democrats and will almost certainly pass the Senate, is a lot more complex than simply locking up and deporting low-level criminals. The Laken Riley Act grew from the killing of a Georgia nursing student by an undocumented immigrant from Venezuela. The reasoning here is that Laken Riley would still be alive had her murderer been kicked out of the country when he was first caught shoplifting. Now, I sympathize with that sentiment, and I understand the importance of not letting anyone off the hook for stealing or committing any other type of crime. But this legislation is bad as it is written. First off, the bill offers no due process. Where is the presumed innocence until proven guilty? The bill requires the Department of Homeland Security to lock up anyone here illegally who is accused of burglary, theft, larceny, or shoplifting. The key word is accused. It means detaining or deporting without due process, without letting the criminal justice system adjudicate each case, which is a cornerstone of America. Who cares if these people shouldn't be in the United States in the first place? Because it undermines the application of justice selectively. And once we erode that, there is no telling what comes next for others. Next, states can interfere with enforcement. Immigration enforcement has been the sole responsibility of the federal government, but this legislation changes that. It allows any state to sue the feds for alleged failures in immigration enforcement, or if the, quote, failure caused the state or its residents harm, unquote. Vanessa Cardenas of America's Voice argues that the legislation empowers, quote, anti-immigrant zealots to overturn long-standing precedent, take the reins of federal immigration policy, and throw our out-of-date immigration system into even more chaos, unquote. And that could lead to inconsistent immigration enforcement policies across the states, undermining federal authority. It might not happen overnight, but that still can't be good. And states would have veto power over visas. Do you still think the legislation is just about deporting shoplifters? Well, think again. You see, under this legislation, states could seek to ban visas from countries like China and India if such countries delay or don't accept their deported nationals. Next, it sends people underground, undermining their safety. The strategy is clearly designed to further terrorize undocumented immigrants and root them out, which would work to an extent, especially since many local authorities can stop them for anything, including a broken taillight, and then turn them over to immigration. But with that kind of enforcement usually comes racial profiling of entire communities. We've seen it. Don't you remember former Sheriff Joe Arpaio and what he did in Maricopa County? Anyone brown becomes a target, including U.S. citizens, and undocumented immigrants will go underground, refusing to report crimes against them or anyone else. Nobody is safe when that happens. Republicans, and now Democrats too, want you to believe the Laken-Riley Act is about deporting shoplifters. But don't be fooled. It is a power grab by states to dismantle federal authority over immigration enforcement. And that was Elvia Diaz's opinion piece, Don't Be Fooled, Lake and Riley act is a blatant power grab. We're at 40 minutes past the hour. We're going to move on over to the section of the paper known as the letters to the editor. That's where we can read some opinions from people like you and me. Our first letter goes like this. I was recently a passenger on beautiful Arizona 87 from Payson to Phoenix through the Mazatzal Mountains and the Tonto National Forest. I immediately noticed the detritus on the roadsides and the median. Cardboard boxes, plastic sheeting adhering to rock formations, plastic grocery bags embedded in cacti and brittle brushes, aluminum cans and glass and plastic bottles along with broken glass. I saw numerous PVC pipes and hubcaps and torn-off fenders. A large pile of clothing was strewn in the median. It's awful to know that people actually toss diapers out the window. This debris flows over into nature and is certain to affect wildlife. People, we can do better. Truckers, secure your cargo, and passenger vehicles, please carry a refuse bag and deal with your trash correctly. And lastly, everyone remember to always use the reusable shopping bags. Signed, Denise Parrish from Scottsdale. Our next letter goes, there's an article about multimillionaire Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray giving $5,000 go bags to his well-paid offensive linemen. To me, that is disgusting. There are many churches, charities, and food banks in the valley that could put this money to good use. Signed, Gene Nelson in Sun Lakes. Next letter goes, it starts with a quote from Mayor Kate Gallego. When Phoenix had a flooding emergency, I leaned in and talked to other mayors who helped me navigate that. As a desert city, flooding isn't something we deal with all the time. Unquote. I am surprised that Mayor Gallego thinks flooding isn't a Phoenix problem and that she needs to ask other mayors how to handle it. Due to mountain runoff, flooding isn't at all unusual when we get a rainstorm. I have a very vivid recollection of rescuing a driver from flooding where Central Avenue crosses the Arizona Canal. Heavy rain had flooded the road, and a woman's car had stalled when it had been driven into the water. Since I was right behind her in a Jeep with better clearance, I pushed her car out of the water, covering the road, before she floated away. But since then, the completion of a storm water tunnel, a.k.a. the Batcave, beside the Arizona Canal, has alleviated that flooding problem. I realize the mayor is young and inexperienced, but her first call when there is a problem should be to the city manager and her public works department. As Phoenix growth changes the landscape, coordination between the public works department and the Maricopa County Flood Control District and the Army Corps of Engineers, it will remain important. Signed, Jim McManus from Phoenix. Next letter. Use military units to help fight these fires. We did back in 89. Signed, Alan Griggs in Buckeye. The next letter goes, reading Greg Moore's write-up about Donald Trump announcing that he will rename the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. Why not stop there? Let's rename the entire United States of America Trumpland. Signed, Gary Coughhold from Kearney. Our next letter goes, the Arizona Republic ran articles and photos about the life and presidency of the late Jimmy Carter. A headline on January 6th is a quote, quote, the finest man that ever served in office, unquote. The timing cannot be more poignant, as it presents the dramatically striking and mournful contrast in character between the late president and the president-elect. It's as if President Carter timed his passing to show the world what a real man, a decent man, should be. Rest in peace, President Jimmy Carter, signed Bob Cox in Phoenix. Our next letter goes, MAGA was prepared to pull off another election denial effort of unknown scope had Trump lost on November 5th, but he won, and the January 6th election certification went just fine. The system worked. Democracy's safe. We can all relax now. Not so fast, bucko. Yogi Berra is attributed to have said, quote, "It's difficult to make predictions, especially about the future," unquote. Well, despite that, I will hazard a guess about what is likely to happen leading up to January 6, 2029. By the 26 midterm elections, enough MAGA promises will have gone sideways to greatly increase the level of buyer's remorse among the many 2024 Trump voters. This will result in the Republicans losing control of the House. Given that, what remains of the Trump agenda will stall out. Trump is term limited. Some other light of the MAGA world must emerge after a savage but entertaining primary to be the 28th Republican presidential candidate. Given reality right now, it seems likely to be Vice President J.D. Vance. No prediction is possible for the other side. J.D. Vance has declared loudly that he would have done what Pence wouldn't do to change the election outcome. And as the sitting VP, he will occupy that same position. So, do you still feel safe? Signed, Michael Wright in Phoenix. And those were the letters to the editor. We're coming up on 47 minutes past the hour, so let's move on over to the entertainment section, and we will begin by reading today's horoscopes. Well, if you were born between March 21st and April 19th, that would be the sign of Aries. Here is what your horoscope says. Are you using your imagination? Taking the empathic approach facilitates problem solving on the home front. For Taurus, April 20th to May 20th birth dates, are you finding your why? You pinpoint how to make a difference within your community. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, you become the Pied Piper, inspiring others to greatness. For Cancer, June 22nd through July 22nd birth dates, are you keeping the faith? Achieving your goals requires conviction and action. For Leos, July 23rd through August 22nd birth dates, Mars and Neptune's harmonious connection puts you in touch with the numinous. For Virgos, that's you fellow Virgos out there, birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, are you on the same page? You and a companion are drawn together by a common cause. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, are you striving to be of service? Your goal is to make a difference in the lives of others. For Scorpio, birth dates from October 24th through November 21st, your vision inspires others to action. Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates. Mars's connection to Neptune arouses passions, but tempers your ego, empowering you to express your feelings. Capricorn, birth dates from December 22nd to January 19th. What is the basis of your connection? You seek a spiritual simpatico with your partner. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates. Are you marrying creativity with discipline? If you take this approach, it can turn you a prophet. Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Are your creative juices flowing? Then take a wild idea and run with it. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, my stepdaughter Annie gave my husband a photo album of his life for his 80th birthday. The The album included pictures of his parents and grandparents, as well as photos from his first marriage to Annie's mother. She included one picture of their wedding and two more of them posing as a loving couple. She included few pictures of me, even though her dad and I have been married for more than 40 of his 80 years. A photograph from our wedding was not included. I love Annie, and we get along well, and I am very hurt that she included those two pictures of the loving couple. I feel it was inappropriate for an album that she expects to be displayed in our home for family, friends, and neighbors to see. I would like to ask her to reprint the album without those two pictures. Am I being unreasonable? Signed, Stepmom in the South. And Abby responds, Dear Stepmom, because you have a good relationship with Annie, explain to her that you felt slighted when you saw the album and why. Explain that you would like to be able to prominently display it if she would please either have it reprinted with the addition of a couple of photos of you and your husband together or with only the wedding picture of her parents. And that shouldn't be difficult to do. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, my 8-year-old nephew accidentally fell on my dog, who then reacted and snapped at him, leaving a small puncture mark on his arm. We immediately removed the dog and apologized to my nephew, who was riddled with guilt because he knew he caused it. Because it was an accident, I told my nephew it was okay. Weeks later, my sister and I realized that my brother hasn't responded to any of our daily text messages or Facebook posts. When we see him in person, he is fine. He jokes with us, even plans to rent a storage unit with us for our grandparents' stuff. But then he ignores our text messages. We told our mother he's been ignoring us for quite some time. He admitted to her that he is super annoyed with the whole family for not training our dog not to react when he gets hit. I now feel my brother's purposefully bad behavior is worse than the accident. What do you think? Signed, Sis, Who Wants Harmony? Dear Sis, what happened to your nephew was an accident. Your brother's behavior is passive-aggressive and childish. I think you should ignore it and quit texting him and commenting on his Facebook post for a while. A long while, don't you? We get a third letter today. Dear Abby, I am a divorced woman who has recently decided to jump back into the dating pool. However, 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. I am in treatment and doing well. When and how would I tell someone I'm seeing that I have cancer? Signed, Reddy in California. And Abby responds, Dear Reddy, the time to reveal your medical diagnosis would be when the relationship becomes romantic. It would be dishonest to withhold that information from someone who is investing emotionally in you. Those were our three letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren, and you can reach her by going one of two ways. One is to go to her website, dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And now we have time for some comics. In the comic strip Zits, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, the two high school boys, Jeremy and his friend Pierce, are all bundled up, standing outside in front of a house in the snow. Looks like snow's falling. And Pierce says, Dijon isn't answering my text. And Jeremy says, Should we ring the doorbell? And Pierce says, Oh, no way! What if a person came to the door? Oh, Jeremy says, Well, that would be awkward. And then Pierce says, Well, I just can't call her. And Jeremy, holds up his hands and waves at him and says, No, never call anybody without texting first. So then Pierce says, Well, should we just wait? And Jeremy says, Well, obviously. As they stand there in the snow, and in the last frame, the snow is now up to their noses, and Pierce says, Etiquette is hard. And that was Zits. And then we have Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker. And General Halftrack is sitting at his desk, and one of his aides comes in and says, "What will you do when you retire, sir?" And General says, "Well, I have lots of options. Maybe I'll run for public office." And his aide thinks, well, he'd never get the votes. And then the next frame, the General says, "Or I could try out for the senior golf tour." And his aide thinks to himself, "Can't sink a putt." And the General then says, "Oh, I could travel the world." And his aide thinks, "Boy, he always gets airsick." And then the General says, "Oh, I could become a gourmet chef." And his aide thinks to himself, "Doesn't know a spoon from a ladle." And in the last frame, the General says, "Maybe I'll do all of that." And his aide says, "You can do anything, sir." That was Beetle Bailey. Well, we're almost out of time, so I better say happy birthday to some celebrities today. The actor Anthony Andrews turns 77. Radio TV personality Howard Stern, he turns 71 today. Director John Lasseter turns 68. Journalist Christiane Amanpour, she turns 67 today. The actor Oliver Platt turns 65. And the musician-director Rob Zombie turns 60. Rapper Raekwon from the Wu-Tang Clan turns 55. And singer Melanie Chisholm, who is Sporty Spice of the Spice Girls, she turns 51 today. And singer Amari turns 45. And actor Issa Rae turns 40. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, January 12th, 2025. Have a great day. Bye-bye.